here, and I'm your host, Brian Beatty. It's mid-October in Minnesota. Well, it's mid-October everywhere. But here in Minnesota, mid-October stands for something. Stands for the football season finally being in full swing. Whether anyone's notified the Minnesota Vikings or not. Mid-October also finds Minnesotans scrambling to throw together Halloween costumes that will make them look sufficiently sexy and at the same time keep them sufficiently insulated in the event of a blizzard. And mid-October here in Minnesota, as in most places across the nation, whether it be the northern reaches of the Midwest or the southernmost reaches of the border states, it's pumpkin spice season. I don't know if pumpkin spice was one of the Spice Girls. I'm talking about pumpkin spice at your favorite chain coffee establishment. 'Tis the time of year they whip out the nutmeg and brown sugar and really go crazy. And in theory, I should be all for this because one of my fondest memories of childhood holiday season is my grandmother's pumpkin pie, which she only ever made in the autumn between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I love coffee. But I have never developed somehow, I'm blaming a genetic defect, I have never developed a taste for coffee that tastes like pumpkin pie. But pumpkins do figure into this month's podcast theme, which is Jack of All Lanterns. Our featured writer this month is David Oppegar, who has a short story to share with us called The Courtship of Claudette Bordeaux.
Martin and I stood at the edge of the pumpkin patch and considered our next move. It was a sunny October day, crisp but not too cold, and the patch was filled with families laughing and poking around. "Suddenly I feel like buying a fleece pullover," Martin said. "Maybe a scarf." I scrutinized my younger brother. A small and solemn-looking 14-year-old, Martin was a math prodigy who'd already graduated high school and was taking college courses online. He wore his dark hair slicked back, and he dressed like a NASA scientist from the 1960s, pocket protector and everything. "Why did you come with me again?" Martin pushed up the bridge of his glasses. "Mom said I need to get out more. She accused me of hermetic tendencies." I squinted and considered the nearest pumpkin, one right on the edge of the field. It was way too small. "Okay, man, but do you even want a pumpkin?" "Sure. I don't see why not." We entered the pumpkin patch, stepping tentatively. About 20 yards in, I found a pumpkin so round and suitable that I knelt humbly before it, snapped it from its umbilical vine, and lifted it into my arms. Closing my eyes, I pressed my cheek against its sun-warmed skin and pictured Claudette Bordeaux. "This is it," I said. "This shall be the chosen one." A rustling came from nearby. I opened my eyes and saw Martin hefting up a pumpkin of his own. It was skinny tall, lumpy, and misshapen. It didn't look heavy to me, but Martin had to use both arms to hold it against his narrow chest. "That's your choice, dude?" Martin shrugged. "I like it." We paid for the pumpkins and hit the road. I was driving the family van because I didn't have a car yet. I'd turned 16 the week before. I wanted something with 6 or 8 cylinders, something with balls, but I was lazy and didn't even have $1,000 saved up. I rolled down my window and let the wind ruffle our feathers. Martin frowned but didn't say anything. He was a math guy and knew the odds of me giving a shit. "Martin," I said loudly above the windy racket, "have you ever been in love?" My little brother looked out his window, ignoring me. He was like a nerdy little Buddha, far above the fleshy concerns of love. I'd never asked, but I wasn't sure he'd actually hit puberty yet. I peered into the back seat where our pumpkins sat side by side, buckled in with safety belts. They looked happy. It feels good, Martin. It feels real good. We set up a butchering area when we got home. We laid down newspaper on the kitchen table, got out the old carving knives, and placed our pumpkins on the table like the two sacrificial victims they certainly were. We dug up a Sharpie marker and drew our intended designs on the pumpkin's slick exteriors. Martin scraped two serrated knives together and grinned. Doctor, I believe it's time to operate. Indeed, Nurse Martin. Indeed. We started carving like mad fucking scientists. We removed our patient's top skulls, scooped out their brain goop, and began the fine facial carving. The surgeries absorbed all our attention. We didn't speak, hardly breathed. Dad came into the kitchen, got a beer, and silently watched us for a minute before returning to the living room. We sawed methodically, lovingly, and the world faded away. When we'd finished, we sat back from the table and meditated on our work. Martin looked confused. You carved a heart? In a pumpkin? Girls love hearts, I said. Hearts are romantic. Martin snorted and shook his head. He'd gone with a classic scream face. Two eyes and an oversized, perfectly circular mouth. Mine's called the Howling Man, Martin said. He howls and he howls. Why? Because he knows the truth. The truth about what? Everything. I waited till dark, like any autumn specter that is up to no good. I changed into dark clothing, gathered my jack-o'-lantern and jack-o'-lantern supplies, and stepped out into the night on my mission of love. I knew Claudette Bordeaux was an exchange student from Paris, France, and that she was staying with the Graylings, who happened to live two blocks away from us. I'd seen her sitting on their front porch a few times, reading books with her feet tucked up beneath her, her comely brow ever so crinkled as she concentrated on whatever she was reading. I wondered if she'd be out reading now, even though it was past 10 o'clock. What would I do if I saw her? Would I say something witty and cool? Or would I simply hand over my gift and flee into the night? Of course, the lights were all off when I arrived at the Graylings. I went up their front walk like I owned the place and set Claudette's jack-o'-lantern down beside their front door, my arms aching from the usage. I took a fat candle out of the pocket of my hoodie, lit it with an Amen flame, and set it carefully inside the jack-o'-lantern. The carved heart ignited from within, downright beautiful in the near dark. I took out the note I'd written back in my bedroom. It was printed on a 3x5 index card with a hole punched into its upper right corner, through which I'd looped and then knotted a piece of yarn, and hung it on the pumpkin stem. I stepped off the porch and took a moment to appreciate the glowing heart and devious brilliance of my plan. It occurred to me that this could be the high point of the entire affair, that from here on out, very little was under my control, and I felt my heart spasm like a trapped bat inside my chest. Then a dog barked, and I got the fuck out of there. Claudette Bordeaux came to me the next day at lunch and said yes, she'd be happy to go with me to the haunted hayride that night. She smiled sweetly and had that cute French accent French people have. She said she was excited for her first American Halloween, and I said yes, I was too, and the whole world took on a fuzzy white glow I had never noticed before. Sadly, my luck did not last long. My parents were going to a neighborhood Halloween party, and they didn't want Martin left alone in the house. Not because my little brother wasn't old enough, the squirt was 14 after all, but because the thought of him being alone on Halloween was too depressing. Jesus Christ. You want to drive the van? You take your brother. But it's your choice, lover boy. Take it or leave it. So Martin and I showed up at the Greelings' house together, rolling in the family van. Unlike the night before, all the lights in the house were on and Claudette was sitting on the porch, bundled in a winter coat. She jumped up as I parked the van and skipped happily toward us. She looks chipper. She is. She's French. Is she a communist? We haven't discussed that yet. Get in the back seat. Martin groaned and crawled into the back. I went around the van and opened the passenger door for her. My, what a gentleman. I caught a whiff of perfume and blinked. Hi, Claudette. Nobody spoke much on the drive out to the apple farm. Claudette smiled and looked out her window while Martin played with his phone and I unsuccessfully racked my brain for shit to talk about. I was glad when we pulled into the farm, which was already packed with cars and people milling about, waiting for their turn on the hayride. The Statue of Liberty was a gift from the French, Martin said from the back seat. It's made of copper. That's right, Claudette said, beaming as she unbuckled her seatbelt and turned around. We gave it to you for the 100-year anniversary of kicking out the British. And as a sign of friendship. Claudette laughed and touched my shoulder. I did not know you had such a smart little brother. I'm taking college courses online. I already graduated from high school. Wow. C'est incroyable. Yeah, I said, looking in the rearview mirror. It's better than a kick in the head, anyhow. We bought our tickets for the next hayride. I fetched us all hot cider and Claudette wrapped up in a lap blanket I'd brought from the van. The truck arrived with its load of hay people, and a scramble of unloading and loading began. Claudette and I ended up on straw bales near the front of the truck bed, while Martin sat at the opposite end, turned away with his short legs swinging out the back. The truck started up and began crawling toward a cornfield that had already been harvested, moving at a heady 5 miles an hour. Claudette shivered and cuddled into me. I felt a surge of electricity through the entire right side of my body. It's sweet of you to bring your brother along. Thanks, but I didn't really have a choice. Our parents made me. Claudette laughed. He's so serious. Yeah, Martin has the weight of the world on those tiny shoulders. I'm glad I'm not that smart. The truck hit a bump as we entered the cornfield and everybody laughed, rocking on their straw bales and leaning into each other. Martin glanced back, ascertained that Claudette and I had not fallen to our deaths, and soberly turned around again, looking out at the apple farm's receding lights. Somewhere deeper in that hallowed cornfield, Claudette Bordeaux leaned in and kissed the corner of my mouth, sending the stars reeling through the black night sky. Later, as I tried in vain to fall asleep, my bedroom door creaked open and a flickering yellow light filled the room. I sat up. It was Martin, carrying his hollowing man. He was dressed in flannel pajamas and his normally slick back hair was wild and woolly. He came up to the foot of my bed and studied me. She's gonna leave, you know. She's an exchange student. I know, Martin. It's okay. Martin tipped the howling man upward and peered inside his howling mouth. You don't deserve her. I sighed and sank into my pillow, suddenly tired for real and ready to sleep for 100 years. Not everything can be explained, buddy, especially not on Halloween. Martin didn't say anything else, but even with my eyes closed, I could feel my little brother still standing there, trying to compute as I drifted off. When I called Claudette the next day, she said vandals had smashed her jack-o'-lantern. They'd kicked it right through the heart.
David Oppegard's debut novel, The Suicide Collectors, was nominated for the Bram Stoker Award. He studied literature and writing at St. Olaf and Hamline University. A special thank you this month to Noah Warren for recording David's story for the podcast. I appreciate the assistance. And as always, yes, I appreciate you giving the podcast a listen. Our upcoming themes for November and December are online at mnartist.org. Past editions are available for download at iTunes. And for the moment, we still have a Facebook page. Thanks for listening. You Are Here is a monthly literary podcast production of mnartist.org. MNArtist.org is a joint project of the Walker Art Center and the McKnight Foundation. The mission of MNArtist.org is to improve the lives of Minnesota artists and provide access to and engagement with Minnesota's arts culture.